Things you didn't know.
You want to know.
That you should know.
Well, hi there. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Welcome to another episode of Things You Didn't Know You Want to Know That You Should Know. Or you can do as we do and just call it Things for short. I am your host. They call me Dave. This is the podcast that is tackling the issues that are important to you, the issues affecting your daily life, even though many of them have been relegated to the back burner by the mainstream media because they're no longer sexy, relevant, or ratings grabbers. In our last episode, we went back to our roots and covered an issue that we know a thing or two about, homelessness. Since this podcast, under a different name, was once dedicated exclusively and solely to the issue of homelessness. We're going to continue that topic into today's episode. And our featured guest today is a well-known and respected expert on the topic of homelessness prevention. She has spearheaded so many different initiatives that have benefited the homeless, and she continues to do so today as the founder and CEO of Community Investment Alliance, an organization making a significant impact in the development of stable housing, robust behavioral health services, wealth-building opportunities, access to healthy food, and integration with the natural environment. Her name is Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis, and we'll be talking to her to tap her brain, find out what's going on, see what her organization has been up to, and find out a bit more about what's going on locally and regionally as far as efforts to curb homelessness. We will also be going through our mailbag today to get caught up on emails that have been coming in from our listeners. Thank you very much. Some general comments as well as feedback that is specific to our last few episodes. We absolutely love hearing from our listeners, getting your feedback, good, bad, or ugly. It doesn't matter. It all helps us grow in the long run. Even if you have a complaint or a criticism, please include that as well. But you can get a hold of us by sending an email to thingspodcast@yahoo.com. That's thingspodcast@yahoo.com. All right. So one of my gripes when it comes to the topic of homelessness has been the lack of a centralized agency dedicated to the prevention of homelessness, whose job it would be to oversee, to coordinate, to guide, and to manage the individual siloed efforts that are taking place around the country, making sure everyone's on the same page, making sure that the overall effort has a larger impact and a greater chance for success. Much like the Department of Education was established to ensure that everyone was on the same page with public education throughout the country. The thinking behind that was that by having a centralized agency that was overseeing all these efforts, it would also provide a greater funding stream to finance many of these efforts around the country, and to kind of level the playing field as far as funding and finance to ensure that one city wouldn't fall short in their efforts because of a lack of funding. Everybody had the same opportunities to receive equal funding across the board. Now, granted, I knew this was an ideal concept and that it would never be realized in the way that I was envisioning it. But perhaps some variation of it or a version of it could one day come to fruition, or so I thought. And to be clear and to be fair, we do have the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, as well as USICH, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, both of whom have taken upon the burden of trying to fill that void of an agency that is overseeing the efforts around the country, even though that is not their sole purpose or their primary focus. But they have done a phenomenal job given what they have to work with. And after several discussions with people who are much more knowledgeable on the subject of homelessness prevention and solutions, I've become aware that my idea for the Department of Homelessness Prevention is not likely to be realized in my lifetime, let alone anyone else's lifetime. And that's okay. And it's okay for a couple of reasons, and I'll tell you what those are. First, because HUD and USICH, and by the way, I'm rather disappointed to learn that nobody else calls them USICH. I started calling them that in the last episode, and I thought it was given that that's what other people called them because USICH spells out USICH. It may not be a real word, but it sounds cool, you know? Like NASA wasn't a word, you know, when they invented the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, you know, NASA, they called it NASA. They made up a word that fit the acronym. So USICH, I thought it would catch on. It didn't. I'm disappointed. Admittedly, I was a little harsh on USICH in our last episode. Unfairly harsh, I might add. because I've since learned that they have done and are doing incredible work and are very dedicated to the fight against homelessness. But anyway, we have HUD and USICH that have taken upon the role of being that governing body to oversee the efforts to prevent homelessness, and they've done it incredibly well, especially given that that was not their intended purpose. In fact, USICH, as I mentioned in the last episode, developed the Federal Strategic Plan to End Homelessness, now called All In, the Federal Strategic Plan to End Homelessness, which has become a primary guide used by jurisdictions around the country. It is also one of two guidelines, or doctrines, if you will, being used by the Biden administration for their new aggressive plan to reduce homelessness by 25% by the year 2025. That plan was announced in December of last year, just a few months ago. That plan is being hailed as the most ambitious effort by any administration to prevent people from becoming homeless, to address inequities that disproportionately impact underserved communities, including people of color and other marginalized groups, and help cities and states reduce unsheltered homelessness. To reach that goal, All In outlines new strategies to prevent homelessness and increase the supply of housing with supportive services, wraparound services. The plan does follow the Housing First model, which, if you're not aware, is an approach where housing is the first step to a better, safer, and healthier life, rather than, for example, intervention or drug treatment or rehabilitation coming first before housing. Serves as a platform for providing services so that people can stay housed. All In also sets the foundation for new initiatives, including one to reduce unsheltered homelessness in a cohort of geographically diverse communities around the country. Now, in this plan, President Biden calls on state and local governments to set their own goals for 2025 and to use All In as a blueprint for addressing homelessness in their own communities. Now, the other guideline or doctrine, if you will, that's being used by the Biden administration for this aggressive plan is the House America Initiative, which leverages federal support for state and local governments provided through the American Rescue Plan. And beginning in January of this year, the White House and USICH have begun working with communities and cities around the country that will receive full-time federal assistance, maximum flexibility and regulatory relief, technical support and additional capacity, and volunteer support. USICH will lead implementation of those overall initiatives and will establish a federal response leadership team to coordinate the overall response, develop the tools and guidance, and track progress and report to its council leadership and elevate issues that cannot be resolved. So that's the other reason why I'm okay with my little, with my Department of Homelessness Prevention not being established. So we've got this aggressive plan in place, and initiatives were already being implemented at the start of the new year, as of January 1st. At least that was the plan. So the question becomes, how's it going? Is progress being made? And the short answer to that would be yes. Look, it's only been 5 months, so that you would think that not a lot can happen in that short amount of time. But baby steps are being made, and steps that are leading to bigger efforts have taken place. I'm going to borrow an analogy made by Jeff Olivet, the director of USICH, to help explain the process of beginning to end homelessness. And that is, until you turn off a faucet, a bathtub will never be empty. So until you prevent homelessness from happening in the first place, it is impossible to solve it completely. And by slowing the influx of people that are becoming homeless from what it once was, that's when you begin to see progress taking place. And one of the key components of the new Biden plan is to prevent homelessness from happening in the first place. So homelessness prevention is a key component of the new plan. Now, some of the key contributing factors to homelessness include a broken criminal justice system that punishes people for living on the streets when they have nowhere else to live but on the streets. That same broken system also makes it increasingly difficult for people to get housing, to get jobs, in order to do the things that society expects them to do in order to become a part of society again. We also have a severely flawed foster care system that fails so many of our young people when they age out. Broken healthcare systems that leave so many people high and dry, without insurance, without treatment. And a housing supply that has gone from bad to disaster, one that doesn't include nearly enough affordable homes. Key word there is affordable. And those are just the big contributing factors. There are more. Now, using the Housing First model, fairly significant strides have been made in getting people back into housing. But the math is pretty simple. For every person you get back into housing, another one becomes homeless, sometimes two. Now, since 2016, we've seen a fairly significant rise in the number of people becoming homeless. Fortunately, we've been able to see that number level off just a bit since the pandemic. thanks in part to President Biden's American Rescue Plan, which included one of the largest ever investments in homelessness. And as a result, some of the most significant successes have been in reducing homelessness among veterans, as well as families and youth. Now, this new plan, All In, that is based on the strategic plan put out by USICH, is evidence-based, and it's based on what people who have experienced homelessness say that they need and want, the ones who know better than anybody. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to our last episode, where we had as our guest Therese Howard, who is the founder of House Keys Action Network Denver. And I'm always impressed by Therese to begin with anyway, but her organization just completed a study, and a plan is being developed from the results of that study. But the study was based on what people who have experienced homelessness are telling us. And who is going to know better what the needs of the homeless are than the homeless, the ones who have lived it themselves? But anyway, that's what impressed me about the study that Therese and her group had just completed. And that's what I like about the all-in strategic plan, a plan derived from recommendations from those who have lived and experienced homelessness. And up until now, or recently anyway, the mistakes we've been making are born from the fact that we've been relying on experts to tell us what they think the needs of the homeless are, without actually taking the time to sit down and talk with those who have actually lived the experience. So yes, this new plan from the Biden administration to reduce homelessness by 25% by the year 2025 is an aggressive plan. That's what we need. But it's also a plan based on sound principles and actionable initiatives that come from those who have actually been there, done that. So we'll keep up to date on progress being made from this plan and some of the different initiatives that are taking place as a result of this plan.
You're listening to
Things You Didn't Know You Want to Know That You Should Know.
So again, as I mentioned earlier, in our last episode, I was rather unfairly harsh on USICH, and that was really largely due to my own ignorance. So I wanted to be sure that we give them a fair shake with the new all-in plan that's been adopted by the Biden administration, in the hopes that we can finally see some true measurable progress being made across the board. Recently, we've heard repeatedly about the successes that have taken place in cities like Houston and Austin and Dayton and Columbus. And those are great, but we want to add more cities to that list. And in order to do that, it will take plans like All In that was developed by USICH, now adopted by the Biden administration, and dedicated people who are willing to and have what it takes to lead the efforts. And we are fortunate to have one of those people as our guest on today's show. It would take likely over an hour to read all of the accomplishments that she has realized and that are relevant to this topic. But suffice it to say that if I want somebody who is in the position to lead any kind of efforts that have a chance at resulting in success, this woman is the person I want in charge to lead those efforts. Her name is Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis, and we're going to talk to her in just a few. So this may be a good time for you to go grab a snack, perhaps a beverage, adult or otherwise, and then meet right back here for The Road to Home on this episode of Things.
Diving deeper into the issues that affect your life.
You're listening to
Things You Didn't Know
You Want to Know
That You Should Know.
We are honored to have with us once again Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis. She is the Chief Executive Officer of the Community Investment Alliance. They're a 501c3 organization that partners with communities to develop stable housing, robust behavioral health services, wealth-building opportunities, access to healthy food, and integration with the natural environment. Dr. Van Voorhis, thank you so much for joining us again. You're sort of our go-to gal for the latest on what's being done, at least in Colorado, to help aid in the fight against homelessness. You've always got your finger on the pulse of the issue. I know you and your partner, Jen Lopez, have been ridiculously busy, as you always are, on initiatives that are taking place not only in Colorado, but in New Mexico and throughout the American Southwest. Fill us in. What's going on with the Alliance?
So the Alliance has been working, just continuing across the state to help communities build out their entire continuum. So working a lot with, we have so many people who have continued to be evicted or displaced due to rising rents. So working with everyone from colleges and college students who can't afford rents, all the way through those who are chronically homeless across the state, trying to create purchasing of motels for master leasing and conversion, all the way through popping up some more safe spaces to ensure that individuals who are waiting for a place to move into have a place they can go to that's safe.
Kathleen, it's getting worse. The perception amongst the general public is that nothing's getting done. It's always a top conversation. I mean, it was the number one issue in the recent Denver mayoral race. It's always at the forefront of the conversation, and everybody's talking about what they're going to do and what their plan is, but nothing is ever getting done. It's becoming like a broken record over and over again. What is it going to take for us to see progress? What do you see down the road?
So, you know, I think, as you said, with the mayoral race, the one thing we're seeing, at least from one of the candidates still in the race, is the conversation of needing to stop the displacement, right? We know that it's gotten worse because we've continued to have a flow of individuals falling into homelessness. And so, you know, without, and this goes all the way up to the USICH and HUD noting, if we don't keep people housed, it doesn't matter, right? How many houses we build. If we build 520,000 homes, but we have 525,000 people become homeless in our nation, we're just continuing a flow. So, you know, it's been a broader conversation of how do we ensure security for individuals. We saw that at Colorado's legislative session, lots of discussions on keeping people housed who are housed, changing zoning, doing things to try and, you know, across the state, make it easier and more quick to build or convert housing. And then conversations pretty universally about, okay, what do we do until that housing's built? You know, we have places not only in Denver, but especially at the rest of the state of Colorado who just don't have buildable land and or rural communities. So, you know, making sure that we're putting safe spaces and services and ways for people who might even have a voucher to move into housing, but there's no place for them to have a place to stay until then. You know, I think we have one mayoral candidate here in Denver who is very interested in continuing that continuum work. So making sure we have, you know, pallet shelters and or tiny homes, and that we're continuing to use some of the funds. You know, we passed Proposition 123 last November as a state. And that does two things. That incentivizes local governments to opt in to build more affordable housing and receive millions of dollars. And it also has a pot of money that goes directly to homelessness. And so we're seeing a lot of communities trying to figure out how to access those funds to continue to flush out that continuum. Because even though we warned, you know, that we were going to have more people falling into homelessness as rent grows, as mortgages and housing price and property taxes increase, we continue to not see a lot of movement. So I think across the state, we've seen a pretty significant expansion in homelessness in the last even year, which is fascinating with the amount of ARPA funds and other federal money we had in place to secure.
Well, and in addition to us not being able to stop the flow of homeless people coming into the continuum, it keeps getting more and more complicated and complex. And one of the things that seems to be complicating it is the fact that nobody seems to be able to agree on what it is that needs to be done to begin to fix it, let alone how to begin to implement any of those solutions that we think will fix it. And it's mind-boggling. And I can't help but keep going back to the one thing I keep bitching about, which is, wouldn't it make sense for us to develop a centralized federal agency, whether it's USICH or HUD or some new agency, to coordinate and guide and oversee the efforts taking place so at least we're all on the same page and we can agree on what we're doing? Explain to me again why that is not viable.
I think, you know, the hardest thing with that is that anytime you have a federal entity, there's certain things that the state and then the local government still have the right to decide. I think one of the, you know, we can look at Colorado's legislative session this session and see the arguments between should the state even be dictating how local governments are moving forward with homelessness and housing. And so, you know, I think strengthening and putting more resource into our federal so they can provide more technical assistance, more incentive grants, things of that nature could really get local governments moving. I think the hardest thing with having one centralized, you know, federal agency is that they'd have to run into so many roadblocks and limitations as we break down into, you know, our different levels of government.
So in other words, a division of the federal government, much like the Department of Education or the Department of Homeland Security, but that is designed specifically for combating homelessness, that's not likely, correct?
Well, so we have different entities, right? So we have HUD that does housing.
Right, but combating homelessness is not the primary focus of HUD.
I think, you know, same things Department of Education looks at, right, is if you look at each state's authority to decide what they can teach under the Department of Education. So some states teach evolution, some states don't. And so, you know, it would be the same sort of thing if we, even if we expanded the powers of USICH, they'd still have to run into some of that state level bureaucracy.
So then it would seem that we've made virtually no progress in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, that we've done nothing. At least that's the perception that is that the general public comes up with, and you can understand why. So what do we say to the general public who's becoming so discouraged? What do we say about the future? Do we just say, that's it, accept it, homelessness is never going to go away, we can never solve it? I mean, people need to see to believe. They need to see progress, even if it's baby steps, just to know that it's possible, that this can get better. So what do we say to them?
Get involved with your local government. You know, I think when we look at federal incentives, they're there, right? There's certain incentives. I think when we look at, especially the state level right now, the most important thing that people can do is call their local government right now and get them to opt in to 123. Don't let them pass up an opportunity to get millions of dollars into their community for housing and for homelessness when people are dying on the streets and falling into homelessness right now. And a lot of local governments are hesitant. It's a new thing. It's slightly complicated, but you know, the local level is what's going to make the big change here. So they're the ones that are going to look at the zoning, and they're the ones that are going to say, much like Denver and Aurora did, yes, we as city council members and as the mayor are going to fund safe space and affordable campuses and things of that nature. And so the more that these local governments hear from their constituents, we want to move positive forward, then they'll be able to help start shaping their own communities.
And real quick, for the benefit of our listeners, as kind of a primer, remind everybody what 123 is all about.
Sure. Super basic is Proposition 123, again, passed on the ballot last November, is looking at pulling down little bits of taxpayer money every year. It goes into a big pot for the state of Colorado. For local communities that opt in, it means they're agreeing to build a certain amount of affordable housing in their community. It's an incentive-based proposition so that communities are incentivized to receive millions of dollars in order to ensure we are continuing to build below market and ensuring our community members can remain in their communities. If a local government does not choose to opt in by this July, they can miss out on millions upon millions of dollars. There is a legislative fix right now looking at certain changes to that proposition for mountain towns, as well as looking at some of that homeless funding. So whether or not and how that kind of comes to the community. But right now what it is, without any legislative changes, is looking at if your local government opts into it, they then are incentivized to receive millions of dollars to help stimulate that affordable economy, and they receive more money for services and are unhoused in our community, which so many are struggling on finding those funds, which is another reason our local governments can't directly impact that problem.
Okay, so among those who are heavily involved and invested in the fight against homelessness, like yourself and to some degree like me, what solutions or efforts do the majority of those people want to see pursued? In other words, where do most people think our efforts should be focused?
So I think there's more, I have noticed, and Pew Research have published, more support towards HUD and housing and the incentivization that's come out right. of USICH, so Treasury, right. HUD, the collective. Right. But they know that that's what they have, right? Their power is not to go into the states and say, you're not doing this, you have to. The power they have is to say, we're going to push thousands upon thousands of dollars into technical assistance. We're going to give more money to states who are following Housing First, Built for Zero programs. And that's the power they have, right? They have the power to give you more money. But it depends on your mayor. It depends on your governor.
Right.
You know, we have a governor who talks a lot about affordable housing, but really hasn't addressed the homelessness in the state of Colorado. And so, you know, it would take a lot more action on their part. Now, they have some amazing individuals in the administration who are looking at aspects of homelessness, but it's not, you know, if we wanted to truly put in a statewide implementation, we could also incentivize more funds to communities to try and do that. But until we do that, you know, the feds are doing as much, I think, as they can without stepping on state power.
How optimistic are you for the future of the fight against homelessness here in Denver with the two mayoral candidate finalists who have made it all the way to the runoff and the knowledge that one of them will be the next mayor of the city and county of Denver? Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but, you know.
No, I mean, I'm happy to discuss it. I think, you know, I've had the opportunity to sit down with both of them. I think they both have really interesting and strong backgrounds in knowing the communities. There's, to my mind, when we talk about homelessness, there is a clear front runner, which is Mike. You know, Mike did not discuss criminalizing and or violating constitutional rights of detaining and committing involuntarily individuals who are unhoused. Just because you're unhoused does not mean you are mentally ill to the point of needing to be kept on a 72-hour hold. It's also a mass constitutional violation. So that was, you know, in my mind, when we look at how are we going to do a full continuum? You know, Mike Johnson has really come out strong with saying, hey, we're going to do pallet shelters and tiny homes and service support, right? Just like Jen Lopez and myself created with the safe spaces during COVID. And we're going to move them all the way through utilizing some of the, I think there's more than 18 parcels that can build about 5,000 affordable units that City of Denver owns right now that they could break ground on tomorrow. And Mike Johnson's been pretty clear about that. You know, he received the support of Leslie Harrod, who had the most progressive homeless and housing plan. And so, you know, I think if Mike's elected, I do have hope that, you know, he's going to bring in committees and he's going to bring in individuals who can try and really create a solution versus the management of homelessness, which we've seen under Hancock for his entirety of his administration.
Before I let you go, what's next on the agenda for Community Investment Alliance? It seems there's always some exciting new initiative on the horizon for your organization.
Yeah, so we're going deeper in communities, and we have a lot of communities working really closely with congregational land right now. We have one amazing congregation that's about to build about 178 multi-generational units, which you don't see in one of the most diverse areas of Colorado. We're just continuing to, you know, really go deep and learn the different cultures in Colorado and try and implement teaching communities the tools they need to sustain so that they don't have to rely on state officials or even us to continue to come in and try and help find those solutions. So lots of education this year, lots of community based progress.
Real quick, the multi-generational effort, is that something new? It sounds like it's got some real potential there. Are others engaged in this effort as well?
No, so we don't have a lot of multi-generational, right? And so if you look at apartments and houses that are, you know, three bedrooms, even two bedrooms, but usually three bedrooms, four bedrooms, they're astronomically expensive. Right. But if you look at, you know, the cultural makeup of Colorado and Aurora being one of the most diverse areas in Colorado, you have multi-generational families. You have the grandparents living with the parents, living with the grandkiddos. And, you know, they're being gentrified and pushed out of their neighborhoods right now. And part of maintaining not only that cultural base that makes these communities so vibrant, but also ensuring the stability of these families is ensuring they have the ability for an affordable multi-room unit so they can have a safe and healthy life.
That is fantastic. I commend you for that. But then again, that's in line with everything you do, which always seems to be 10 steps ahead of everybody else. So not surprised there. And we applaud you for the incredible work that you and Jen continue to do. Your work always seems to provide us with a sense of hope and optimism when we really need it, and we aren't getting much of it from other sources. So we thank you for that.
Well, thank you. We're very fortunate to have you in there as well, Dave.
I don't know about that. I just know it's an honor to be included in the same grouping as you and Jen, undeservedly so as that might be. Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis, CEO of Community Investment Alliance, thank you for once again taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show, to provide us with your expertise and your insight, and to help us get a better understanding of things that are sometimes kind of hard to understand these days. So we'll check back in a couple months and we'll see what other things you're up to that is helping to change
the world. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
And you can find out more about Community Investment Alliance by going to their website, communityinvestmentalliance.org. That's communityinvestmentalliance, all one word, .org.
Mailbag!
You've got mail.
We always love hearing from our listeners, whether you want to offer feedback on how we're doing or offer some some possible suggestions for future show ideas. Your emails are really the best way for us to gauge how we're doing and to allow us to improve and get better. Communication is the key. Thought we'd take a moment and share some of those emails with you right now. We heard from Nancy in Atlanta. Nancy says, I really enjoyed both of your episodes on the DACA situation. My best friend is a gal I met at work. She is in the DACA program. She has lived here in Georgia since she was an infant and doesn't know any other home than America. It seems so unfair to tell someone who was born and raised here that they may have to leave. Do we know when the case might go before the Supreme Court? First of all, Nancy, you are preaching to the choir. Believe me, I share your frustration immensely. I find it mind-boggling that we could be in a situation where some of our friends and neighbors who have lived here their entire lives and have become a part of the American culture may be deported. But unfortunately, that is the way our immigration system was set up. Even more unfortunate, it's the way that DACA was set up. One of its biggest flaws is the fact that it was set up without a pathway to permanent residency or without a pathway to citizenship. Unfortunate as it may be, we can only hope for the best. We do not know exactly when the case will go before the Supreme Court. Best guesses right now are sometime this summer, but we'll have to wait and see. And best of luck to your friend. Then we heard from Luke from Mesa, Arizona. Luke says, why don't you do an episode on Republicans refusing to do anything about the mass shootings taking place all over? It's insane how they are married to the NRA. They care more about drag queens than they do about gun violence. That's an issue you guys need to talk about so everyone knows just how crazy it is and that it is unacceptable. Luke, thank you for your email. I share your frustration more than you may realize. So once again, you're preaching to the choir. Yeah, it's at least from appearances and lack of action, it would all indications are that the Republicans in Congress care more about drag queens, about banning books, and about the sharing of trans bathrooms than they do about the safety of our children in schools due to mass gun violence. We are looking into doing a show on this issue. As you know, we've done a couple of shows on gun violence, but we're looking into doing an episode that is specifically on the lack of action on the part of our Republican elected officials. So we'll let you know when that might be coming up, okay? Again, thank you, Luke. Appreciate it. And then we have an email from Jenna from Lone Tree, Colorado. Jenna says, my husband and I really enjoy your podcast, and we look forward to new episodes every month. Is there a chance, is there a chance your episodes might be more frequent than just once a month? Keep up the good work. Thanks, Jenna. We get this question a lot. We realize that a lot of the better podcasts in America come out with the frequency of at least twice a month, if not weekly, some even daily. We're working our way towards that. Can't give you a timeline on that, but we're just trying to coordinate through all the organization that would take and the staffing that would take, and we're going to see what we can do in the near future to make that come to fruition. No promises, no guarantees, but even if we only stay at a monthly format, we hope you'll keep on listening, and thank you for the feedback. If you have something you want to say to us, give us your feedback, good, bad, or ugly. Even the ugly is constructive. Or if you want to shoot us some suggestions for future show topics, you can do so by dropping an email to thingspodcast@yahoo.com. That's thingspodcast@yahoo.com. Come on, drop us a line. Just say hi. And that's going to about do it for this episode of Things. Hey, if you're looking for ways to get involved, remember what Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis said during our interview when I asked her what do we tell people? And she said, tell people to get involved with your local government and tell them to opt in to Proposition 123. That's a great way that you can make a difference right now. Hey, immense thanks to Dr. Kathleen Van Voorhis for coming on the show today, sharing with us her incredible expertise and knowledge and insight. Thank you so much, Kathleen. As always, huge thanks to Mr. Max Apple. Without Max, none of this would be possible. Thank you, Max. We love you, buddy. And finally, we give huge thanks to you, our listeners, because without you, I would look like an idiot sitting up here talking to myself. Thank you for continuing to listen to the show. Thank you for helping to spread the word to your networks, to your family, your friends. Please keep doing that. You are the reason we do this show. Things You Didn't Know You Want to Know That You Should Know is a production of Uncommon Sense. You can find out more about Uncommon Sense at their website, which is uncommonsense.info. That's uncommonsense.info. And that's also the place where you can find out more about this podcast, by going to uncommonsense.info/podcast, or just go to the homepage and click on the podcast link. Hey, it's been fun. What do you say we meet back here 1 month from now? All right? Until then, stay healthy, stay cool, stay safe. See ya.